Summer in Sodom. Chapter 5. Ted drifted sluggishly toward consciousness of the following morning. Through the persisting veil of sleep, he was vaguely aware of the birds singing outside the window. He heard the excited chatter of a youngster on the beach and the ever-present rhythm of the waves upon the shore. The morning air was chill. A brisk breeze pushed through the curtains. Ted shoved his face down beneath the covers where he found a close cave of warmth. He remembered the past night with a hot, guilty flash of pleasure and pain. He remembered the hard body jutting in the meat and knotted muscles of his own ramrod leanness. A wave of shame drowned him, sucked him into the depths of his own inner guilt. But the quick searing of pleasure of Ian's arms gripping him tightly cast him up again. Ian's name throbbed through his body with every pulse beat. He remembered the long time afterwards when they had both lain gelid in the slumberous aftermath of spent passion. And he remembered Ian's words, Ian's soft voice dispelling the towering guilt that had reared within him. "I felt the same way as you do now," Ian had said. "Guilty, ashamed. It always was that way at first. But think of it for a minute. With Eileen, you could only wind up in trouble. Take it from me, Eileen has had her share of that. This way there are no problems. You're safe." The pieces began to fall into place as Ian had talked. The strange, furtive secrets that had so mystified Ted slowly took on meaningful shape. "This is all new and strange to you," Ian had continued, "but this sort of thing is as old as time. I've studied it. This is something inside of you that has to come out. There's nothing either of us can do about it. Some guys go for dames and some don't." Ted had protested then. "But Eileen is great," he said haltingly. "I mean, I feel so much the same way with her." "Eileen is dangerous," snapped Ian. "You can't afford to play around that way with her." Ted pondered his remark. "But she said that she, well, that she was in love with me." Ian laughed disparagingly. "They all say that. She's really in love with your body, and don't forget it. And so am I, but in a different way. I can really appreciate you because I'm the same, and you can appreciate me. You do, don't you? You want to touch me right now?" His voice acquired a fierce intensity. "I do, but then again I don't. I'm all confused." "Of course, so was I, the first time." Ted's curiosity was fired. "What was it like? I mean, the first time, for you?" Ian shrugged and moved closer to him. "I was 12. I belonged to a boys' athletic club. My folks sent me there to get me out of the way at home. They were on the juice pretty hard most of the time. I got to know the guy who ran the place. He was about 20, I guess. One night, we were both there alone because I was afraid to go home. He got me talking, and the next thing I knew, we were on the mat. He said he loved me, and I was a kid, so I believed him." "What happened?" "One night we were making merry hell, and the supervisor walked in on us." Ted whistled. "What happened then?" Ian shrugged. "He was fired. Left town. I've never heard of him since." "That must have upset you." "Hello, no! By then I had more guys on the string than I could handle. I was glad to get rid of him. I joined another club." Ted stared at the night sky for a while, letting this sink in. Finally, he asked, "Haven't you ever had a thing for girls?" "Women are great," said Ian stubbornly. "I've got a lot of women who are good friends. But once they start to get dewy-eyed, I drop them. Believe me, all a woman does is use her body to break a man the way she wants him broken. All smashed in little pieces, crying for her." Ted remembered the hot, glazed lust in Eileen's eyes, her aggressive insistence. There was nothing he could say to refute Ian's argument. As they walked back to the house, Ian asked, "What are you going to do about that property in Buffalo? You ought to think about that. Sounds like there's a lot of money tied up." "That's what the lawyer says. He wants to sell the place for me." Ian stopped walking and leaned against the picket fence. "Why don't you sell it?" "I've always lived there. Sentimental, I guess. Maybe in a while I will. It's a pretty big place for me to live in." "I think you should do something about it right away. Property values might drop." Ted shrugged. "The college will always buy it. They need the space. If I hold out for a while, the price might even go up." "I'd dump it now," said Ian adamantly. "You can't tell what might happen. Anyway, you could probably use the money." "I manage," said Ted noncommittally. "I've got a job, and there's some money from the estate my father left. Enough to get by on." "You're still not wealthy." Ted moved to the pathway leading the front door. I don't really want to be. Ian shook his head. You're making a big mistake, and you'll find out about it someday. They walked quietly into the house. At the foot of the stairs, Ian took Ted's hand in his and kissed him lightly. The last sensation Ted had was of Ian's long eyebrows upon his cheek. Troubled by his own response, he had gone upstairs and climbed into bed. Strangely, he didn't dream that night. For the first time since her death, his mother's face did not appear. Now he shifted restlessly beneath the heavy woolen blankets. Sleep refused to claim him completely. He stretched and allowed each muscle in his body to contract, tighten, and then release. Languidly, he lay on his back, hands behind his head, watching the sunlight invade the room. He felt relaxed and completely lazy. All his former tension was gone. Dark shadows of guilt, a deep inner feeling that what he had with Ian was wrong, still lurked beneath the feeling of peace. But he quelled these thoughts firmly by remembering Ian's reassuring words. He convinced himself that it would likely never happen again. That the moonlight, Ian's hypnotic sensuality, his own throbbing need for fulfillment had combined to create the entire bizarre episode. It was an experience. He had enjoyed it, but he doubted that he would ever be just like Ian. Eileen's body was still very important to him. He resolved at least to get up, have a shower, and see if he could find her. He felt that he had something to make up for what had happened between them the previous night. He swung his long legs out of the covers onto the rug. There was one thing to be said for Ian's decision to put a rug in every room, he decided. The floor wasn't so shockingly cold first thing in the morning. He went to the mirror and looked at himself sleepily. His red hair was tousled. His eyes were etched with thin lines of red, but his hard-hewn body was as before. The morning was taut in his loins. He was a picture of graceful male virility. He decided that it was time he got to work on his tan. Eileen was in the kitchen when he entered. She smiled at him gravely and then turned away, flushing. Her embarrassment inspired his own. He turned his back and looked out the window, feigning casualness he really didn't feel.
You were late getting in last night,
Eileen commented. There was a hint of censure in her voice. Quickly, she changed the subject.
Do you want some bacon and eggs? The coffee is on the stove.
Just coffee, he said. He picked up a cup from the drain board where the wash dishes had been stacked. I ran into Ian on the beach last night, Ted said. That's why I didn't come in right away. He walked over to the massive old stove and picked up the coffee pot. Did we make too much noise coming in?
I was awake anyway. I couldn't sleep last night after I got in.
She reached down and opened up a cupboard door. Pots and pans clanged together as she searched inside. Ted found his eyes riveted to the straining material across her buttocks. He could remember the smooth, rubbery texture of her against his avidly exploring fingers. But then the impact of her words struck him. He frowned, trying to recall what she might have heard. He waited until she stood up. She put the pot on the stove and went to the cupboard.
What did you and Ian talk about?
She asked.
You know, I warn you to stay away from his crowd. They're not your type.
Ted felt his cheeks burn. We talked about you, mostly, he said, hoping to draw the focus away from himself. Eileen whirled.
What did he tell you?
She said intently. Her eyes searched his face. Ted regarded her anxious expression curiously. He said that you and I ought to be careful. Well, about fooling around on the beach. He watched her closely, saw the strained expression she fade. He came up behind her and put his arm around her waist. Is there anything else he should have told me? Like what's with you two, for instance? She wriggled away from his grasp.
Don't be silly. There's something about Ian that you don't know. He doesn't like woman very much. He's never laid a hand on me.
Ted believed her, but he still felt that there was something important, something involving Ian and herself that was holding back from him. Whatever it was, it created a wall between them, a wall built of secrecy and fear. Mrs. Coburn chose this moment to bustle into the kitchen. She smiled at Ted.
Well, we missed you two at breakfast. You two have a late night?
Her voice was totally devoid of remonstrance. In fact, Ted had the distinct impression that she would have fully approved had he kept Eileen out until the early hours of the morning. I slept in. It's the fresh air, I guess, he said, sipping the scalding coffee. Again, he tried to figure out her entire change of attitude toward him. He finally decided that she was sorry for him because of his mother's death. Well,
you just do whatever you want while you're here. You know that Eileen and I will do everything we can to make you feel right at home.
Thanks, he muttered detachedly. I think I'll go in for a swim. Did anybody see Ian this morning? Maybe he's in the mood for a quick plunge. Ian's company would be more comfortable than Eileen's anxious restraint or her mother's overwhelming solicitude. Anyway, he wondered just how he would react to Ian in the light of day, now that the moonlight spell was gone.
Ian went to town right after breakfast, said Eileen. He said that he had some important business to discuss. That can only mean that someone had better look out.
Now, Eileen, I think that you're too hard on Ian. He's certainly done a lot of work around here, and he's been a good friend of yours. Mrs. Coburn shoved hunks of meat into the grinder as she spoke.
It isn't his fault that he's...
She stopped speaking and looked up, remembering Ted's presence.
Anyway, he's just a big brother to you. I know him better than you do, and that's for sure, retorted Eileen. Ted seems to like him. Don't you, Ted?
Ted backed away from inclusion in the mother-daughter squabble. He was in no position to pass judgment upon Ian Raymond. He's okay, was his noncommittal reply. I'm going to the beach. When he comes in from town, tell him to open me a beer. He enjoyed the shocked look on Eileen's face at his last words. What kind of a goody-goody did she think he was anyway? It was time he began to prove to her that he was a man. He put down his cup and sauntered out of the room. The coffee revived him. He squinted at the sun on the water through the screen on the front porch. The scene was inviting. He felt good. Things were looking up. Ian parked the Dodge at the side of the amusement park. A few children were playing the slot machines in the arcade, but other than that, the place was deserted. He got out of the car and stood looking around, trying to decide where he should look first for the man he had come to see. At last, he walked toward the door on the opposite side of the park. Although it was only 10 o'clock, the morning sun glancing off the sand made the air shimmer with heat and humidity. A cool beer would go down well, he thought. Also, he might find his man in the bar. He stood inside the door for a moment, adjusting his eyes to the dim light. The bar was empty, but Ian's practiced eye fastened on the door which led to the back room. He walked over and sat down on a stool. Immediately, the door at the back opened and a barrel-chested, hairy-armed man strode in. His face was horribly mutilated by purple splotches and crusted ridges of skin running across his forehead and down his cheeks. He walked behind the bar and drew a beer without saying a word. He set it down in front of Ian. Ignoring the quarter, his macabre face twisted into a scowl.
Well, have you got the money?
The voice was flat and hard. The words were a demand, not a question. Ian stared into the cruel, narrow eyes.
No, you've got all the money I had. I'm broke.
The eyes narrowed into slits. A fleshy tongue licked the greasy, thick lips.
Then maybe it's time to put you out of the way. You can't produce anymore. You're no good to me. You better get your sweet little ass out there and make a few bucks, or I'm going to have your balls for bookends. When I carve people up, I do a good job.
A blade suddenly appeared in Scar's hand as it rose above the counter.
Believe me, I get some good ideas every time I look in the mirror.
His voice became quiet and deadly. The knife hovered a few inches from Ian's chest.
How'd you like to look like me, pretty boy? Would you like that?
Ian inhaled as the sharp tip pierced his shirt, pricking the skin beneath. His confidence was shattered. His eyes were glassy with fear.
You can have my car, he said. That's all I've got left.
Scar laughed loudly.
Hey, he yelled, slamming his beefy hand flat down on the bar.
Abruptly, the door to the back of the bar flew open. Ian whirled to see the three figures crowd through the narrow doorway. He knew the leather-jacketed trio well by reputation. Scar's hoods. Their motorcycles tore up the backcountry roads, striking fear into the local farmers. And yet, no crime could ever be traced to them. They were a dreaded iron hand among the gay colony. It was common knowledge that they despised the Nellies and regulars. They got their weird kicks from torture and mutilation of other men.
Wait a minute, cried Ian. I've got another idea.
At a signal from Scars, the three sat at the bar on either side of Ian. One of them loosened a huge leather belt from around a narrow, sylph-like waist, drew it out, and pretended to examine the ridges and knurls on the elaborate buckle. Ian knew what that belt could do to his flesh. He had no hope but the one desperate plan concocted out of his panic during the past 2 days. Scars looked at him impassively.
I'm waiting, he announced, and it better be good, pretty boy, or the police are going to see some very interesting pictures.
I didn't kill that kid, cried Ian. You know I didn't.
Scars shrugged.
I don't know, and I don't care. Maybe I wouldn't hand the pictures over to the police anyway. Maybe I'd let my boys have a little fun with you.
He leaned over the bar. His voice was flat behind a humorless, evil smile.
I bet the boys would really have fun with a pretty, pretty boy like you.
Ian glanced on either side. The three were ignoring him, but he felt the buildup of tension beneath the elaborately casual outward expressions. Haltingly, he told Scars about Ted's house, how he had already seduced Ted, how they could both make money from Ted's property. Scars considered the matter.
Would pictures be enough to make him hand it over? Would the kid need a bit more persuasion?
Ian relaxed. He knew that Scars accepted his plan.
There's just one thing, he insisted boldly.
Yeah?
When the house or the money are yours, you give me back the negatives of me and that kid, and I want a split of the dough to get started again in business.
You're getting demanding all of a sudden. What if I say no?
Ian shrugged.
Then you can kill me or hand the pictures of me and that murdered boy over to the police. I don't care anymore. This has got to be the end of it.
Scars rubbed his hand over the blue-bearded jowls. Finally, he nodded.
Maybe you're not ready to toss over yet, he said. You get the kid to make some pics with you.
Where?
Scars jabbed a stubby finger at Ian.
You meet me here tonight and I'll show you the setup. Then we can plan a time for the show.
Watching the three hoods from the corner of his eye, Ian slid cagedly from the bar stool.
Okay, he repeated. I'll see you tonight.
He turned and fled to the door. Behind him, the three hoods and Scars were laughing.